Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to History Dweebs. I'm Tim Scott. I'm joined here by Charles Hawkwaters. How are you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing great.
And Brandy Herman. She has blue hair. How you doing, Brandy? your blue hair looks nice.
Thank you.
Welcome to part two of the podcast on the New Orleans Axeman. If you have listened to part one, you know that in part one we discussed the murders. And here in part two, we're going to talk about the suspects, and we're going to actually reveal the killer. So this is exciting. If you haven't listened to part one, you can go to our website, historydweeb.com, or you can now download episodes from iTunes or Stitcher. So just to quickly recap the story, a serial killer known as the Axeman terrorized New Orleans from the spring of 1918 until the fall of 1919. During that time, at least 12 people were attacked in their homes by a man with an axe. At least eight people died. In most cases, the axeman would enter the home by chiseling out a panel in the door. He would kill by using an axe or a hatchet that was found in the home. So these were people were killed by their own instruments. And then he would leave the axe behind. So he was thoughtful in that sense.
Well, you know, got to leave him something.
For the next axe murder.
Well, yeah. The victims were both men and women. Some, but not all, were Italian grocers. And in 1919, the attacks just ended. There were several people arrested, but no one really, the murders really remained unresolved to this day.
Until now.
Until now, and when we will reveal the killer in this podcast. So this is very historic. It's a very historic podcast.
Sure.
Yes, it is.
The Axeman actually, during the height of his terror, or someone allegedly claiming to be the Axeman, wrote a letter to the people of New Orleans. It was published in the New Orleans Times-Picayune, in which the Axeman taunted the police. And we read that letter last time. Chuck read the letter, but he didn't use his southern drawl last time. So we thought that just to catch you up, we would ask Chuck to read a portion of that letter again, this time using his southern drawl.
Well, I will start where he makes a deal with the citizens of New Orleans to spare their lives.
Thank you, Charles.
Undoubtedly, your Orleanians think of me as the most horrible murderer, which I am, but I could be much worse if I wanted to. If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in close relationship with the Angel of Death. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time on Tuesday night, I'm going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I'm going to make a little proposition to you people.
Because he's
a
giver.
Here it is.
He's a giver.
He's a giver. He's a kind man. He's a kind evil demon.
It's reasonable.
I'm very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all of the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared in whose home a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well, then so much the better for you people. One thing is certain, and that is some of your people who do not jazz it on Tuesday night, if there be any, will get the axe. That was his deal that he made to the people of Nolan.
And he kept his deal. No one was killed that night.
No one was killed that night, and Nolan's was louder than...
ever. Yes.
45 rabbits in a tin cage.
What? You know, I've never heard that expression before.
Because he just made it up.
Rabbits make a lot of noise.
I would bet they do, but so there was jazz music playing, and he was a man of his word.
Nobody got killed.
You know, it's good that that's, you know, you don't, serial killers today don't always.
They don't always keep their word.
Right, exactly. So there were some, several people arrested. There were some suspects. But we found someone else who we think is the actual murderer. But Brandy, tell us about the people who were suspected by the New Orleans police. Chuck's got me doing it now.
I know. So there were four, well, actually five people that were arrested along in this year's time, that the police, suspected and either ruled out or sentenced them, to prison. Andrew Maggio was one of the people. He was at the first murder scene. His razor was found at the crime scene, and he had a Rat Fink employee, Esteban Torres, that told police that Maggio removed it from the shop 2 days prior to the murder, saying that he wanted to have a nick honed out from the blade.
Oh, likely story.
Snitches get stitches.
Yes, they do.
Andrew found the couple 2 hours after the event because he heard moaning through the walls. He was released after investigators could not break down his statement or his account of an unknown man who lurked around the area. So they let him go. Moved on to Mr. Louis Obicon. He was an employee for Bessemer's store. He was arrested because of conflicting accounts of where he was.
Yeah, and he was just an employee. The only thing he didn't have an alibi, or he came conflicting,
right?
Yeah, stories, but they had no physical evidence, or he was an African American. It was a South, so it's like blame it on the black guy,
right? And Bessemer, as we know, was the one that was living with that
Harriet Stowe
slut.
She was his mistress.
While his wife was in Cincinnati, she was a harlot. Harlot.
She was. That's strong.
But they couldn't. They couldn't hold him. Louis Bessemer was also held. His axe was found in the bathroom of the apartment, and that axe was used to kill Catherine. He was a German spy, and they began an investigation on him. And a couple weeks later, Harriet Lowe told police she thought that he was a German spy, and that led to his arrest. Bessemer was released, and two police were demoted to unacceptable police work.
Yeah, it was during the First World War, and because he was German, there were some, you know, allegations that he was a spy. But that was never proven. And he was also attacked at the same incident. He was hit in the head with an axe.
Right. But he was later arrested again in August of 1918 after Anna Lowe told police that she was attacked by him a month prior to her failed surgery at Charity Hospital.
I'm telling you, never get a surgery at a charity hospital.
Right.
Never.
He was charged in murder and actually served 9 months in jail before being acquitted on May 1st of 1919.
And the jury went out like 10 minutes or something. It was very quick.
It was kind of ridiculous. So the last two was Irlando Giordano and Frank Giordano, and these were the people that came and heard the screams of Rosie and Charles and their baby Mary, heard their screams, ran over to help, and Rosie just claimed that they were responsible for the attack. Charles, of course, denied all of this. But the police still arrested the two and charged them with murder. Frank was the son, and he was sentenced to hang, and his father was given life in prison. And about a year later, Rosie rolled into the police station. She found Jesus and said that she did it. She blamed them out of jealousy and spite that they really actually weren't there, and they were released from jail.
See, my theory on that is that she was just in hysterics, and they came over to help. They were the first people she saw, and she just assumed they did it.
My theory is they went to the charity law firm.
Yeah, perhaps.
It's like the charity hospital, and they have poor legal representation.
Yeah, so they actually served some time, but then it turned out
one of them could have died.
Yeah, one of them could have been executed. Are you bored?
I'm sorry. One of them could have died, but, you know, she, whatever. She lied, and she went back and told the police, so they were exonerated.
So the police are in this thing, in their investigation, they had the ability to do fingerprints, and they just didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't do it. There's no record of them doing it. The descriptions are very vague. It's a dark figure. He was either described as
a large, dark figure.
Right. He was described
as an apparition.
Yeah, like it almost supernatural. Type of thing. But
the axe was real.
The axe was real, but as all the people he attacked, very few could give a description of the guy. I think one said he was an African American, but other than that, none.
Well, I think a couple blows to the head with an axe will scramble your memory.
Yeah, it would. It could do that. So, Charles
Foghorn,
one of the leading suspects, though, in this case, is a Mr. Mumphrey.
Mr. Mumphrey came about. A crime writer, Colin Wilson, wrote a series about the Axeman murders.
Okay, he did some research.
Although he was very interested in Jack the Ripper, saw the similarities. Although this Mr. Wilson was very interested in sex crimes, he was a little bit of a deviant himself.
Wonder what websites he visits.
He's dead.
He's dead now. This was back when.
The investigator?
Okay. According to Mr. Wilson, a man named Joseph Mumphrey was the lead suspect. He then went to this Mr. Mumphrey, moved to Los Angeles, where he was hunted down by Mr. Pepitone, the last victim, I believe, widow, and shot to death. However, in Los Angeles, there are no records of such incidents. Now, you have another two early murders, the first murders of the Axeman, the Chiambra family. They were shot by an intruder in the lower Ninth Ward. And the suspect was a man named Mumphrey. However, there's been no proof that a Mumphrey even existed in this case. It was just speculation. So what we have is the main suspect in this case that's been recognized throughout history because it's been repeated over and over by crime writers from this Mr. Colin Wilson is this Mr. Mumphrey, but we have no evidence that he even existed.
Yeah, and there were some other folks who did some research, and they just couldn't find. They couldn't find the Mumphrey or the lady who was supposed to have shot. No records of either one.
And there was no murders in Los Angeles at that time.
I just love how we're taking all kinds of crime and just tying it all to the Axeman. Why don't we just do that?
Yeah, and the other, you know, then they were looking at things that happened like 8 years before or something. It was
axe murderers don't change the modus operandi.
Which brings us to we're going to reveal the killer now.
Well, the killer, everybody who has investigated this has missed the most obvious.
Yes, and the police missed it. But of course, they did not have the resources that we have today, like Wikipedia.
Wikipedia,
which is always true.
And which is always true.
They didn't have the World Wide Web.
They were lacking the internet. That's true in 1901. But we know now, with a little research and a lot of using up a lot of foot leather, we have identified We have identified the We have identified the killer. And that person's name is...
Dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun.
Mr. Jake Bird. Now, why do we think... This is a little background on Mr. Jake Bird. Mr. Jake Bird was born in 1901 somewhere... These are air quotes here. Somewhere in Louisiana. So we don't know for a fact that he was in New Orleans, but we know that he was born in Louisiana, and he would have been about 17, 18 at the time of these murders.
Now, where did Mr. Bird end up?
He traveled quite a bit. I'll get there. Hang with me.
He was a traveling man.
He was a traveling man, and he made a lot of stops. So anyway, he was born in 1901. He would have been about 17 or 18 at the time of these attacks. And this is according to Mr. Bird, he leaves Louisiana when he's 19, which would be in 1920, and that is when these attacks suddenly stopped.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
So he's in and out of jail most of his life. He's a transient. He's traveled all over the country. And Brandy, how you're amazed at Chuck's knowledge of worthless information, and you refer to him as
Cliff Clavin.
Cliff Clavin. Mr. Bird worked as a Gandhi dancer. So Chuck, what is a Gandhi dancer?
A Gandhi dancer really was a railroad.
Told you wouldn't know.
He was a, and at the end of the day, and to break up the routine and the monotony, they would sing. And sometimes
they would dance.
And if they were doing it working on the railroad, they were known as Gandhi dancers.
He's amazing. I took this out. We were talking about this case before when we were researching it. He went on like 20 minutes about Gandhi dancing.
I know.
Hell's
a Gandhi.
It's a lost art.
Of course it is.
They're building the streetcar down there. There was a couple Gandhi dancers down there.
They would just stop and get on it for a minute. Yeah.
Okay, so back to... I'm sure he was a very talented Gandhi dancer, but back to Mr. Bird. So he was in and out of prison, and this is weird because it's... what I found on him is that he was 45 when he was arrested, and it said he was in and out of prison 31 years of his life, so... The dude was incarcerated a lot.
Yeah.
He was in trouble.
Or he liked the food.
Maybe he liked the food. But in October of 1947, he was arrested in Tacoma, Washington. And guess what he was arrested for?
Axe murderer.
Jaywalking.
Not jaywalking. He was arrested for an axe murder of a Bertha Klont and her 17-year-old daughter, Beverly. What happened is the police got a call about some screams. They went to investigate, and they found Mr. Bird coming out of the Klotz home barefooted, and they chased him. cornered him in an alley, and he took out a knife and tried to cut the police. And apparently they beat the crap out of him. But
which they're prone to do when you pour a knife on them.
Yeah. But anyway, Mrs. Klutt and her daughter were both killed with an axe, and blood and brain matter was found on Mr. Bird. Now, get this. You talk about justice quickly served. This happened in October of 1947, so he was like 45 at the time. Or 46, I'm sorry. This went to trial in November of that year. So
a speedy trial.
A speedy trial. The trial lasted 2.5 days. He was found guilty after the jury deliberated 35 minutes.
And that was just so they could get a lunch voucher.
The judge sentenced him to hang in on January the 19th. So this is 3 months after the attack. And after he was found guilty and he was sentenced to hang, his defense attorney concurred with the decision. That's a strong client advocate for you. So Mr. Bird caught red-handed pretty much as an axe murderer. Now, why do we think he could be our man? Well, he was, again, in Louisiana. He says he was from somewhere in Louisiana.
He liked to travel.
He liked to travel. He wasn't sure where he was born in Louisiana, which I thought was odd.
Sometimes they're not, though. You got to remember, I mean, this is the early 1900s.
Well, people generally know where they're born.
No, I mean, not if nobody ever told him. I mean, they're black. They don't have a lot of, they might not have birth records. No, but I mean, they might not have birth records. They might not have, I mean, there's a lot going on there.
But here's the most damning evidence. Here's where I tie the two together.
Oh, God.
The barefootedness.
Yeah, one in the Burstmeyer and
a lot of them.
With Burstmeyer and his mistress Harriet Lowe,
slut.
In that case, there was bloody footprints found in the home.
And with DiMaggio's.
And with DiMaggio's, and again, this was an axe that he found in this Tacoma incident was found in the home. So. Was from Louisiana. He was there at the time in New Orleans. He was there at the time of the murders. He leaves Louisiana. The murders stop. Same MO as he in Tacoma. He becomes known as the Tacoma Axe Murderer because he's going in these folks' home and killing them with the axe. He's found guilty of that those murders. He's sentenced to hang. But right before he's to hang, the governor of Washington State granted him a stay when Bird confesses to killing 46 people across the country. So they give him a little bit of time so they can resolve these unresolved murders. Investigators from across the country are brought in, and they find that they can collaborate that he did commit 11 of the murders he claims, and 33 other ones were close enough where Mr. Bird would be considered the prime suspect. In the cases included cases in Kentucky, Illinois, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, Ohio, Florida. And in New York, he actually was accused of killing a grocer, which, again, is along the same lines of these attacks in New Orleans, as well as all these attacks. They were all done, again, with either a hatchet or an axe. So the fact that Mr. Bird was in Louisiana at the time of the New Orleans axe murders, the fact that he was arrested 30 years later for a similar incident, and that he was also fingered in all these other axe murders across the country. In the meantime, all these different states, I think, is pretty strong evidence that Mr. Bird is the is our man. What do you think, Gare Brandy?
He could be. I think a lot of these murders that happened in New Orleans, I think some of them were copycats. I think some of them are just you know, there was hysteria. I don't know that he did all of them. I certainly think it's a possibility, and I would lean toward him.
He would certainly have been, I mean, he would, if he was not the killer, he would have certainly been there at the time and know
sure.
of the killings.
Oh, absolutely.
And they were, you know, they were well known.
Absolutely.
Which is interesting that he didn't bring those up when he was confessing to the other crimes.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that he didn't know. I mean, I still go back to where he was born. You know, he doesn't know where he was born. And maybe he says I was somewhere in New Orleans because he doesn't want to be tied back to these for whatever reason. He did confess to the to these other crimes, but these were crimes that he confessed to after he was found guilty. He knew he was going. He was buying time at that point.
He was taking the Ted Bundy approach.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about Mr. Berto, we probably agree he didn't write the letter. Yeah. Even if he was the axe murderer, he didn't write the letter to the newspaper. But he did have some kind of supernatural kind of vibe to him. Because what when he was sentenced to hang, he put on a hex on people.
Oh,
so
he started hexing people.
So tell us about the Jake Bird hex, Chuck.
In Jake Bird coming clean on these things, it was not him being remorseful. He was bragging. He was just bragging because he was a vengeful man. Jake Bird was. He was found guilty. Oh, he was. Well, I know five people who know for sure he was a vengeful man. And that will be Edward Hodge, who was the Superior Court judge in the trial. Joseph Coppedge, who was the undersheriff. George Harrigan.
I always wanted to be an undersheriff.
Who was...
Not bad. Go ahead.
George Harrigan, who was the county court reporter. Sherman Lyons, who was
the... reporter.
Tacoma
what the hell did
police
he do?
Detective.
That's worse, son of a bitch. Just showing up for work.
Taking notes.
And Mr. James W. Selden, who said, his own defense attorney, who said, shit, he's guilty.
I love that he concurred with the verdict and the sentence of hanging. I mean,
you know, so as a lawyer, though, don't you just want to do that? Just
he
like,
did it.
Yeah.
He did it.
Yeah.
So you're saying,
Mr. Bird became a little agitated with these people.
Right.
And put the famous Jake Bird hex on these people, and every single one of them within the year died.
Yeah, it's every one of the people
every
that he put a hex on actually
that he put
died.
A hex on died within a year of his hanging.
And didn't they all die of a heart attack?
A lot of them died of a heart attack. Now, of course, back at that time, they did not have Lipitor. They did not, you know.
Jake Bird's a witch.
Yeah, they were smoking Terratins or what they
were
all.
I was kind of
afraid. Terratins, Lucky Stripe. They, you know,
right. They were not in the best.
Lucky Stripe.
Right. They weren't
Lucky Strikes.
They weren't
whatever
they
had.
As they are today.
But they did
actually die. And I think he said something to the effect, all of you will die before I do. Which they did.
Which they did. And
the rest of them died after.
And here's a funny pattern. One guy was 69. One guy was 46. The next guy was 69. The next guy was 46. And how old would you guess the next guy would be?
69.
76.
Well, that's not consistent
at
all.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a pattern. So anyway, Mr. Bird was not a nice man. He was a barefooting, axe-murdering rat bastard. That's all I can say about him.
And Mr. Bird was hanged on June 14th, 1949, at the age of 47, at the Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla, Washington.
Walla Walla.
Walla Walla. Chuck.
Yes, sir.
In your opinion, do you think Mr. Bird is the New Orleans axe man?
Oh, without a doubt, that barefoot monster is our man.
Brandy, you have doubts, but you would indict anyway.
I would indict.
Okay. I would hang him.
I would
hang him. He looks guilty.
He does. Well,
he looks
there's
mean,
that.
Plus the hex.
But I mean,
he killed five people.
Okay, like I said, when they talked about, they described, you know, all the people described a African American. It was like, okay, blame it on the black guy. It's not a surprise. But the thing with Mr. Bird is he is African American, and
he didn't wear shoes.
He doesn't wear shoes. You made me lose my train of thought. Oh, serial killers for the most part are white males, right? So. They're rare. Serial killers are rare. That they're African American serial killers.
The only one I recall is the foul beast that killed the children in Atlanta.
Wayne Williams. And other than so they're rare. So again, I think all of this evidence combined probably would at least land an indictment. You agree?
I concur.
Because you know when you're shaking your head, people listening to podcasts can't see that.
They can't really see. Smart they ass. Cannot see your hair is blue either.
Yeah. We got you that. Have the bluest hair I've ever seen.
Well, that's so sweet.
Yeah. Okay, so nice. Another mystery solved.
Yes, we can put that in the, we can take that out from the cold case files into the solved file.
Yes. So any parting thoughts, Brandy?
No. I don't have any parting
Not
thoughts.
Not at all.
No, I mean, it's a very interesting case, and, you know, I learned about it watching American Horror Story, and I didn't realize that this was actually a real guy until we started looking into it, and it is.
And they did, like, a fictionalized.
Yeah, they did a very fictionalized version of him. So, I find it very interesting, and I find the hysteria that goes along with it interesting as well.
Hysteria? So, people were getting hit in the head with a damn axe. Of course they were hysterical.
Chuck is going to talk like that, like, the rest of the day.
No.
Chuck, any final thoughts from you, Mr. Stanley Kowalski? Yes.
I can only say that I'm happy we could put this to rest, put this matter to rest, that the victims can finally have some peace.
Some closure.
That they will not be walking this purgatory and they will go to where they belong.
Yeah, well, that's that is if they listen to our podcast. And if they were in purgatory, they could find our podcast at
historydweeb.com.
Or our Facebook page.
Or our Facebook page.
Yes.
And they could be eligible to win a prize.
No, that's not true. We don't have anything. We have no prizes.
They could download it on iTunes.
And Stitcher.
For free. Yeah.
And they could win a
We don't charge a dime for this quality programming.
1 2-liter bottle of Coke Zero.
What is wrong with you? We're not giving away anything.
For our 200th like on our Facebook page, we shall give away 1 2-liter bottle of Coke Zero.
Well, really?
I'm taking it out of your pocket. You're really? Just willy-nilly giving stuff out.
Yes, we don't have a budget for that, but thanks for the offer, Chuck. Okay, thank you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.